Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay. Welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions during this broadcast, you can write to me at bonkaye, B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, at AOL.com, and I'll be happy to respond to you. Tonight, I'm really excited to welcome back one of our most favored guests, Donna Anderson. Donna, thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, Bonnie, I'm so glad to be here. It's been a long time. I'm happy to connect with your audience again.
Yes, and I think that so many things got tilted around during the COVID years, and things are just off balance, and I know that, you know, I wasn't doing the shows for about 6 months, but I've been back for a while and trying to get as much information out to women as possible. And we have a lot of new women in our network now that really weren't around in our group, you know, when you were on our show last time. And one of the things that most impresses me about Donna is the fact that if anybody understands the meaning of sociopath and narcissist, this is the woman who can define it for you. I don't think anybody can define it better. And Donna's whole, you know, movement here is called lovefraud.com. If you go to her, you know, website, you'll see all the wonderful resources that she's able to bring to you. Donna, as time has gone on, we've seen more and more of our women now, especially we have a Zoom session so we can actually talk live to each other. More and more women who have husbands or ex-husbands or, you know, who have narcissistic characteristics and sociopathic characteristics, sometimes a combination of both, and they make it so difficult to get through these, not only marriages, but once the marriage is over, they just don't let go. So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but maybe you can tell people a little bit about how you started your whole movement.
Oh, yes. Well, I found out about sociopaths in much the same way that many of your audience probably did, in that I married one. My sociopathic ex-husband turned out to be a complete con man. He took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women during our 2.5-year relationship. He had a child with one of those women, and then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time he committed bigamy. And, I was in utter frustration talking to my therapist about his behavior. You can imagine that I was in need of some therapy with this going on, and she said to me, "Wow, he sounds like a sociopath." And I'm like, "Sociopath, what's that?" Well, I started researching it, and yeah, you know, I looked into one of the first resources that I found was Dr. Robert Hare's book called Without Conscience, in which he describes in layman's terms what a psychopath is, which is very similar to someone with antisocial personality disorder. So that was what I first found, and then I started doing more research. And I did, by the way, find out that my ex-husband engaged in the same type of behavior that you talk about. He was having sex with gay prostitutes. He was trying to arrange threesomes, and you know, with women, the woman that he was involved with, and then others. And so he did all of that stuff, and it's just very typical behavior for someone who has one of these sociopathic personality disorders.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you together altogether?
Only 2.5 years. But mm-hmm. that was enough time for him to wipe me out financially and put me into debt. And it wasn't until after he left, because how I escaped him is a whole other story that's been told on TV a few times. But anyway, it was after I left him that I really started researching his behavior. And that's when I found all this documentation of him soliciting gay prostitutes and, you know, doing other things. And believe me, I was just shocked and mortified and you know, just totally devastated by the idea that he was doing this, which is, I'm sure, what many of your audience has also experienced.
Mm-hmm. So, Donna, when you were going with him, were there any red flags that maybe you missed along the way?
Oh, absolutely. And I just didn't know what they were. And one of the main things was that he definitely engaged in love bombing. And people probably know that term now, but, you know, when I went through this, and, of course, this was back in 1996, there was no Google. There was no way to, like, try and look into somebody's history or anything like that. But he showered me with attention. He told me I was the woman he was waiting for all his life. He painted this rosy picture of, you know, what our future would be together. He, you know, blocked out our calendars. Right in the very beginning, it's like, okay, which nights are we going to stay at your house? Which nights are we going to stay at my house? I mean, he poured it on heavy. And me, not knowing that this is a classic sign of love bombing, and which is a classic strategy of someone with antisocial personality disorder, I mean, I thought the guy was just into me, and he was the man that I'd been waiting for all my life. So absolutely, that was one of the things. And it was because of that experience, everything that I went through, after I launched Love Fraud, I started hearing from all these other people who had similar experiences and were telling me their stories. And so I did research on this and actually did a survey and tried to determine what are the warning signs of somebody who is actually a predator and who is, you know, out to take advantage of you. So that was, you know, one of my first books called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And, you know, that's the one that lists all the red flags that I found, you know, doing my research.
Can you give me a few of those red flags so our women can hear them for them from you?
Oh, certainly. So the top warning sign is someone who is charismatic and charming. You know, just about all people who are sociopaths and engaging in trying to seduce somebody. They show this amazing, they're charismatic, they're charming, they always know what to say, they never miss a beat. Most, that was the top sign. Not everybody exhibits that sign, but a lot of them do. So that's one. Another one is what I call the sudden soulmate. When you meet this person, you feel like you've met the person that you've been waiting for all your life. Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason, especially now with the availability of Facebook and online dating platforms, what the person does is they study you, figure out what you're looking for, and then present themselves to be exactly what you're looking for. So they actually change their personality or create this charade of what you're looking for, but you don't know this, and you think that you found the person who's your soulmate that you've been waiting for all your life. So that's an important one. Another one is that they move very quickly to hook up because they want to get their claws into you before you escape. So you may experience the whirlwind romance where this person wants to be around you all the time and you know, is always coming up with dates and different things to do. So that's a big one. And then, of course, there's the sexual aspect of it. A lot of sociopaths are very highly sexed. And so if you feel like your experience is, you know, beyond what you've ever had before, well, there could be a reason for that. And, you know, their sexual magnetism comes from the fact that all sociopaths, including male and female, have very high levels of testosterone. So that means that they want to pursue sex, and that's exactly what they do. You know, plus they have no boundaries so that they're willing to be experimental, and they also have all kinds of stamina. So you feel like the sex just rocks your world. So those are some of the warning signs. Now, of course, the ones that I just explained to you sound pretty good. You know, if you met a guy who's charming and sexy and thinks you're wonderful and is telling you how wonderful you are and showering you with attention and is good in bed, you know, it's like, wow, like who wants to complain about that? So you also need to be on the lookout for some of the more obvious negative signs. And one of the most important ones is that sociopaths blame other people for everything that goes wrong in their life. You know, they don't take responsibility, and everything that happens to them is, you know, their crazy ex-wife or their stupid boss or something like that. So they never take responsibility. And it's important to notice this because, you know, there are other negative warning signs. Like, for example, they lie a lot. You know, they lie like they breathe. They tell big lies, little lies, and stupid lies. But you may not know that because the whole point of lying is that you don't know what's going on. But the blaming one, that will be apparent right from the very beginning. So if you start to see this pattern, you know, where somebody is very charismatic and charming and is love bombing you and telling you how wonderful you are and is extremely sexy, you know, plus you catch them lying sometime and then you notice that they're definitely not accepting responsibility for anything that goes wrong in their life, then you got to start paying attention.
Is there a prototype of a woman that they're looking for, do you think?
I don't think so. You know, essentially what happens is that sociopaths are looking for anybody who offers them something that they happen to want at the moment, okay? And so it could be that they're looking for sex. It could be that they're looking for money. It could be that they're looking for somebody to take care of their kids. So what happens when you encounter a sociopath? And of course, you don't know this, so this is what the sociopath is doing. The sociopath figures out if you have anything that he or she wants. Then the sociopath figures out what your vulnerabilities are, and then they figure out how to use your vulnerabilities in order to convince you to give them what they want. And they do that with anybody. They're opportunistic, you know. I've heard of stories where, you know, somebody like a professional woman who got hooked up with a sociopath, unfortunately, you know, finds out that, you know, the next girlfriend is like a cleaning lady or something like that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they have these high standards. It's just that whoever will serve whatever their purpose is at the time, then that's who they'll latch on to.
You don't think it's like a conscientious decision to look for someone who may have had a bad previous relationship or a low self-esteem? Because I think that I see a common pattern in our women where they come from homes that were not stable homes to start with. And so when they're looking for some kind of solution or something better, that it's easier to fall prey to people like this who are very convincing. And because you don't really have the life experience, if you come from homes that you don't have the stability, it looks good. It really looks good on the outside.
Right.
And you can
okay.
think it will be good. But I
yes.
think maybe they're looking for that. Am I right or not?
Well, what they are looking for, okay, and you did kind of touch on it, is they are looking to figure out what somebody's vulnerabilities are. Okay.
Right.
And a woman who has had perhaps disordered parents who has had, you know, a dysfunctional family growing up, they definitely have a vulnerability because of that experience. And then what happens if, you know, someone grows up in that situation and then you start dating and you end up with guys who are kind of, you know, taking advantage of you also, that increases your level of vulnerability. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily that they're intentionally looking for people who come from dysfunctional families, but they do quickly figure out what somebody's vulnerabilities are, and then what they do is they promise to take the pain away. You know, they promise that they're going to solve all their problems. They're offering them the future that they always wanted. They say, I love you, when they never heard anything about it. So, but this can also happen to somebody who had a good upbringing. Like, I didn't come from a dysfunctional family, or at least not outrageously dysfunctional. Yeah, I mean, my family had its problems, but, you know, my parents did their best to raise us and take care of us, so it wasn't like I was abused or anything, but I still ended up with a vulnerability. And, you know, the vulnerability was that I felt like I had to earn somebody's approval or earn love by doing things for them. I didn't feel that I had that I was intrinsically worth love. And again, it wasn't. I knew my parents loved me. They did their best for me, but it was never really overt in my family. Like, nobody said I loved you or anything like that. So, you know, even though they did their best, I still ended up with a vulnerability, which made me vulnerable to the sociopath when he finally came along. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that you had this terrible childhood, but that certainly can contribute. But it can also be whatever your vulnerability is.
Oh, absolutely. They certainly take advantage of everything. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to talk a little bit about, first of all, your website and all the things you have to offer people. So if you go to Donna's website at lovefraud.com, it's just amazing because, first of all, there are so many Love Fraud webinars that could really be helpful to many of you who are going through this now with your divorces. For instance, I see you have one here, Improving Parental Alienation in Court.
Yes, that's coming up in a few weeks.
How to store the above. Yeah, how understanding empathy and emotional intelligence protects you from abuse. You have one on how to protect yourself financially when divorcing a sociopath. That is a major issue with the women in my group. And with this webinar, and these are very inexpensive webinars. I mean, they're amazing. For $25, you can save your life here. And when it says how to protect yourself financially when divorcing, it shows about how they hide their debts, you know, how they claim poverty, how they run up your legal bills, which is happening to a lot of our women, by the way, Donna. Their
mm-hmm.
husbands are either quitting their jobs just so they don't have to pay child support, or, you know, they're hiding their assets all over the place. And so this, I think, is such an important webinar here. Tools for navigating narcissists and other people, recovering your physical health after the sociopath, self-care, take back your throne, counseling survivors, wonderful, wonderful seminars that apply to so many of our listeners. Also, you have books. Let's talk
mm-hmm.
about your book. You said you have a new book that's coming out.
Well, it actually has come out. My latest book is called Senior Sociopaths and How to Recognize and Escape Lifelong Abusers. And the reason I wrote this book is because there is this common wisdom, I guess you could say, in the mental health field that sociopaths start to burn out in their 40s and they engage in less antisocial behavior. And
uh-huh.
this never made any sense to me because my ex-husband was 55 years old when I met him, although he lied about his age, you know, among many other things.
Uh-huh.
But he certainly did, I mean, he was going, you know, full force into this manipulation and exploitation. So I'm like, what are these people talking about? And I kept hearing from other folks who were involved with people who they finally figured out were sociopaths, perhaps after being married for 20 or 30 years, or they, you know, started dating someone later in life, maybe after a divorce, and figured out that this person was a sociopath and was just after their money. So it was like it just made no sense to me. So what I did was a few years ago, I did a survey on lovefraud.com asking people specifically about their experiences with sociopaths who were age 50 or older. And I picked age 50 because, you know, all these mental health professionals are saying, oh, they burn out in their 40s. And they say, well, you know, if we start at 50, they should be burned out by then. And so I had like actually two surveys, and a combination of about 2,400 people filled out my surveys, and I asked them, you know, specifically about their experiences, and they could talk about any type of relationship. Most of the people did talk about romantic partners, but I also had people talking about their parents and about their siblings and about their work colleagues and neighbors, and so I collected all this data. And the key question of the survey was, you know, first of all, well, did you know this person both before and after age 50? And about 40% of the survey respondents did. They, you know, had known the person, you know, growing up, or if it was their parents or their siblings, or they married them while they were young, so they knew the person before and after age 50. And then I asked, you know, if you knew this person before or after age 50, before and after age 50, did their behavior get better? Did it get worse? Did it stay the same? Well, 91% of my survey respondents said their antisocial behavior was just as bad or worse after the age of 50. So essentially what that means is that, you know, these mental health professionals who are saying that they burn out and they stop this behavior, they're totally wrong. You know, sociopaths do continue their behavior after the age of 50. And the reason this is so important to understand is because, and maybe many of your women have experienced this, they keep waiting for the person to grow out of it, you know, to finally calm down and mellow out and stop doing all this stupid stuff. They're not going to. I mean, that's the value of the survey and the book, is that I go through and explain how once somebody has one of these personality disorders, once they're an adult, they are not going to change. So that's why it's so important to be able to recognize what you're dealing with, because, you know, once you figure out that you're involved with a sociopath, there's no point hanging around. There's no point trying to make it work or wait for them to, you know, mellow out, because it's not going to happen. So you need to take this information and decide how you're going to move forward in your own life.
Let me ask your opinion on something, Donna. I had a situation where my ex-husband, who passed away 3 years ago, but definitely, you know, was a sociopath. He had a cult of like 80, 90 people who he took over their lives, made them lose whatever they had. You know, as a whole, that could be a book within itself.
Mm.
But there was something about him. I mean, he was the father of my children. You know, I dragged him along, you know, for too many years. You know, when you have children, it's not so easy just to break away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did the best that I could. You know, he didn't spend that much time with them, but he needed time with them just to show off to people that he could have children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he used them also. But the point is this. What, you know, I would always try to be nice to him because I thought being nice, you know, makes a difference. And if I wasn't nice to him, then he would snap at me, start cursing me and blaming me for everything that's going wrong, and I never support him. Well, some of his things are horrible, and I wasn't about to support him. But I think the things I learned most, and this is what kind of made me make the break, was I was watching one time an episode of The Sopranos. Have you ever seen that show?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the therapist who was treating Tony Soprano, who was a gangster, lovable, but a gangster, after all these years, her friend said to her, "Why do you keep treating him? He's not going to change. Why do you continue to do this? You're just encouraging them." And that's when I realized that my being kind and nice to someone who's really off is not helping me. I mean, it's just encouraging him. And do you feel that they use people that way to encourage their bad behavior?
Well, let me ask you a question. At what age were you and what age was he when you came to this realization?
Well, it was only a few years ago. My children both passed away when they were in their 20s. And, you know, he just wouldn't let a break be there. He would say, "We have to stay together for the sake of our children. We have to be, you know, friends. We didn't live together or anything." But he would just call me every day and drive me insane. And, you know, finally, I just went along with it until finally I realized no matter what I say to him, you know, his thought patterns are so distorted, and I wasn't helping him. I couldn't change him. He wasn't going to change. And that's when I realized sociopaths just don't change.
Right.
Because they don't
see
they're doing anything wrong to start with. They think that
exactly.
The whole rest of the world is wrong with them.
Yes. Yes, and you're exactly right, and that's exactly the point that I make in this book, is that they aren't going to change. It doesn't matter how good you are to them or how nice you are to them, you know, because they'll just continue to take advantage of you and use you and milk you and manipulate you as long as you allow it. Now, the only reason to pretend to be nice would have been when you were still co-parenting with this person.
Right.
You know, because then, you know, you have to worry about are they going to lash out? How's it going to affect the kids? And, you know, all the stuff that goes on in that situation.
Exactly.
But I would say, you know, that once, you know, you weren't co-parenting children, and you know, there's no point. There's absolutely no point.
Right. And there wasn't any. And that's when, you know, I realized I had to make the break. But I could see he was already in his, you know, I went back with him in the last year and a half talking to him because he was dying. And he said, you know, "I wanted to call to apologize, you know, tell you I'm sorry, you know, if I've done anything to hurt you. And I'm sure you're sorry if you hurt me." It's always a double-edged sword there. But I felt like because our children weren't here, you know, I would be kind to him that last year and a half, which I was. But the point is that they don't change. It doesn't matter how old they are. I think they get worse.
Well, they do.
I think as time goes on, they think their behavior is, you know, acceptable, and since nobody's there to change it, because you can't, they just feel it's fine to be like that. And I just see that happen time after time with older people who did terrible things throughout their life. They don't change. That's why there's prisons to keep them in there. They don't get better.
Right. And the other thing that happens, and, you know, plenty of the people who filled out my survey pointed out, is that not only do they don't change, But what can happen is that they stop pretending to be normal. You know, they just don't care anymore about keeping the facade up. So whereas, you know, perhaps earlier when they were younger or if they were still in the workforce or something like that, they would at least, you know, try to be human or look like they were human from, you know, for time to time. But it gets to the point if they're retired, they're not working anymore, then there's no point to them. There's no point, you know, with the charade. Because that's what it is to them, you know, acting like they're a human being is not natural to these people, and it's hard work, you know. It's like, you know, trying to speak a foreign language all day. It doesn't come naturally to them. So, you know, it happens that once they get older, they just stop. They just, you know, don't even try anymore to keep that facade going. They just, and they, many people reported that they became more cruel. Some said that cruelty seemed to be the only thing that they were interested in. So this is what happens when, you know, someone who is a sociopath or a psychopath gets older. They get worse, or they definitely don't get better, and there's a very good chance that they'll get worse.
Hannah, can you define the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath for our listeners?
Yes, and actually, I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that does need clarification. And I use the term sociopath on love fraud a little bit differently than the common understanding of it. I use the word love fraud as an umbrella term for multiple personality disorders in which the people who have these disorders exploit and manipulate others. Now, this is actually the way the term sociopath was meant to be used when it was originally coined. The term sociopath was coined back in 1930, and it meant anything deviated or pathological in social relations. And there was a time when there was an official diagnosis called sociopathic personality disturbance, but that went away. They don't have that anymore, and now the official term is antisocial personality disorder. There's also a term called psychopathy, and those are the psychopaths. So a lot of people, including many therapists, use sociopath as shorthand for antisocial personality disorder just because it's a mouthful, you know, to say that. That's not how I'm using the word. I'm using the word sociopath to mean antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and histrionic personality disorder. And these are all called cluster B personality disorders by the American Psychiatric Association. And then there's the term psychopathy, and these are the psychopaths. And psychopathy, believe it or not, is not a diagnosis at all in the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual. And there's this disagreement in the mental health field among, you know, whether you should use the term psychopath or whether you should use antisocial personality disorder. And essentially it's like this political dispute, and all the people who are clinicians use antisocial personality disorder because they have to, because it's in the book. And all the research is done using the term psychopath because that's where the tests are that, you know, are valid in measuring someone's level of disorder. So what it comes around to then in the end is that antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy are very similar, although not precisely the same thing, but very similar. Narcissistic personality disorder is separate, and the difference basically there is that all sociopaths are also narcissists, but not all, all antisocials are also narcissists, but not all narcissists are antisocial. You know, there's like another level of malevolence, you know, with the antisocial personality disorder. And then, you know, the borderline personality disorder is similar in that these folks also tend to be manipulative of others, although the disorder comes from a different cause. Unfortunately, a lot of the women who have borderline personality disorder were sexually abused when they were young, and the men who have this disorder were often shamed by their parents when they were young. So, and then there's the people with histrionic personality disorder, and they tend to be very highly sexual. They have to be the center of attention. But what all these disorders have in common is that the people who have them do not have the ability to authentically love. And so that's why I want to educate people about all of them, and it, for simplicity's and communication's sake, I use the term sociopath to cover all of them, because, you know, it from the point of view of us who have been targeted, it really doesn't matter which precise diagnosis somebody has. I mean, they're all bad news. They all take advantage of us. None of them know how to love, and we need to be able to spot all of them. So my goal is to educate people on the fact that these folks exist, and so that we know to watch out for them, we know what the warning signs are, and we know to, when we can, to get them out of our lives.
I'd just like your opinion on this. For these personality disorders, regardless of what they are, do you think it's nature over nurture, or both, or what?
It is both. Essentially what happens, particularly with psychopathy, because that's been the most studied, but then, of course, that applies to antisocial personality disorder. These disorders are highly genetic. In fact, they are about 50% genetic. So what that means is that somebody, a child, can be born with a genetic predisposition to be disordered. Now, there is an interaction between genetics and the environment. So it's a combination of nature and nurture. So a kid can be born with this predisposition, and then depending on the environment that they grow up in or the type of parenting that they get, that can influence it so that the genetics take hold and the person does start to develop this personality disorder. Now, unfortunately, sociopaths make terrible parents. So what happens is a child can be born with a predisposition, and with a genetic predisposition, and typically what that means is that one or both of the parents are disordered, although genetics is a crapshoot, and it could come from somewhere else on the family tree. But anyhow, what happens, if they have disordered parents, they get born with a predisposition, they get this lousy parenting, you know, from their sociopathic parents, and then you have another mini-me sociopath that's growing up. So at least for antisocial and psychopathic personality disorders, it is highly genetic, and then there is the influence of the environment.
And how do you think the influence of the environment works?
Well, the parenting. Essentially what happens is that since people with antisocial personality and disorder and psychopathy, and narcissists for that matter, they do not have the ability to authentically love. And that includes their own children. They can't love their children. And by love, what I mean is there's three components to romantic love. The first component is attachment, which means that you want to be with somebody who you consider to be special. The second is sex, which is pretty self-explanatory. But the third component of romantic love is caregiving. And what that means is that if you love somebody, you want to take care of them. You want them to thrive. You want them to be happy and healthy. You want them to succeed in life. Well, sociopaths do the first two. I mean, they can definitely attach to somebody, and they definitely are interested in sex. Sociopaths do not do caregiving. So they simply cannot put somebody else before themselves. You know, they're always out for number one, which is them. And this includes their children. So they can't do for their children what they should. They can't put their kids first. In some cases, that leads to outright neglect and abuse. Other times, it just is this atmosphere of the child isn't good enough, or they have to, you know, constantly be on high alert to watch out when, you know, mom or dad flies off the handle, or they feel like, you know, the parents' problems are their responsibility. So all those things factor into creating an environment where the child not only can't thrive, but in many cases may be abused and neglected or just, you know, not given appropriate love and attention. So that's the interaction. You know, once you have the genetically predisposed child, you know, plus this type of parenting, that's when you get someone who is also disordered.
Do you think in any level that these people know what they're doing when they're
sometimes
victimizing people?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they do. And the key thing about these disorders also, you know, especially antisocial, narcissistic, and psychopathic personality disorders, and the others too, borderline and histrionic, they are not delusional. Okay, you know, this is not a mental illness where, you know, somebody's hearing voices or, you know, they can't interpret, you know, the world or something like that. You know, these folks, they know exactly what they're doing. They do understand that what they're doing is wrong, is against the rules of society, but they just don't care. You know, what they're missing is any moral or emotional attachment to doing what's right, and they have nothing that prevents them from doing what's wrong. So, you know, there are plenty of cases. In fact, if you look at these websites, you know, like a couple of them, Sociopath World and stuff like that, I mean, sociopaths are like, you know, sneering at the rest of us and talking about how easy it is to take advantage of us, and that, you know, if you're dumb enough to fall for my schemes, that's your problem, not mine. So in many cases, they know exactly what they're doing.
When you have these guys who do the love bombing and trying to get you to be with them right away and fall in love with them, I think it's kind of like this question of, you know, when you're dating somebody who's physically abusive, on the first couple of dates, they don't come to your door and say, you know, I'm so happy to meet you, and smack you in the face. It's a progressive type of relationship. At first, they get you to love them, and then over a period of time, then they will hit you, and then they will tell you they're never going to do it again and how sorry they are until the next time. But it's not something that happens right away. But that's, you know, their personality to do that. Do you think the same thing here when you meet these guys and, you know, you're taken in by them and they don't show these behaviors necessarily right away? But does it take time until they show it? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Of course. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, they know that if, you know, they hit you on the first date, they're not going to get a second date. You
exactly.
know, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, sure, sure. They're well aware of that. And what they're doing, and this is actually really important for people to understand, because it helps to explain why it's so difficult to extricate yourself from these relationships. And what happens is, all romantic relationships are essentially psychological bonds that you feel with the other person. And
mm-hmm.
the bond is established in the beginning through pleasure. So, you know, you have a good time with this person thinks you're wonderful, they bring you flowers, they take you out to dinner, whatever they do. I mean, all this creates pleasure. And this creates the beginning of the psychological bond. And this is in all relationships. This isn't just specific to sociopaths. But what happens when you're dealing with a sociopath is that sooner or later they do something to create fear and anxiety in you. And typically it's fear and anxiety of losing the relationship. Like, for example, you know, you've been dating for a period of time and it's all been wonderful and you're having the time of your life and they're telling you how wonderful you are and it's just this big, you know, whirlwind romance. And then they, like, promise to take you out and blow you off or don't show up. Or you catch them in a lie. Or, you know, something else happens. They say something mean to you, and you know, all of a sudden they flash this rage, and, you know, which you never saw before. Well, this creates fear and anxiety because all of a sudden your honeymoon is shattered, your the beginning romance is shattered, And you don't want to lose this wonderful experience that you're having. So this creates this level of fear and anxiety. Well, fear and anxiety actually strengthens the psychological bond that you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens is that, you want to go back to how wonderful it was at the beginning. You plead to find out what the problem is. You may, apologize for something you didn't do. The sociopath, finally relents and you reconcile. Well, this strengthens the bond again. So then you've got the pleasure going, and then you have another incident of fear and anxiety, and then you have reconciliation, and this goes around and around and around. And with each turn of the wheel, the psychological bond that you feel gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And eventually it becomes so tight that you can't disengage. So this is why people end up in these relationships when they're being battered and they just can't seem to get out of it. They're stuck in this relationship. It's because that this psychological bond has gotten so strong that it's very difficult to break.
So you work with women. People can have personal consultations with you, correct?
Yes, I do offer consultations. Mm-hmm.
Which you can go to Donna's website and find how you can talk to her for a consultation. Can you help them legally at all, Donna?
I personally don't do that type of work, at least. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not a paralegal or anything like that.
But do you have resources for them?
I'm sorry?
You have resources for them?
Sometimes. What I can do often is just kind of talk about a couple of things. First of all, helping people understand exactly what they're dealing with and,
mm-hmm.
what the person is likely to do. And that's a big part of the issue is because, most folks who are normal, who are going into a divorce, you want to do what's fair, you want to do what's right. And you need to understand that the sociopath doesn't care about that at all. So, that's one of the things that I can do is help people to understand what they're dealing with. I can also make some suggestions about possible ways to proceed. But as far as actual, I may have a few resources. I don't have a whole list of people all over the country. But I can, point them in the right direction.
It seems like you do have a lot of resources, though, on your website. I'm just so amazed that your website has expanded so much since I've last looked at it, even within the last year and a half, because I've gone through your books, I've ordered your books, I've read your books, I'm just in awe of your books. But, they certainly have expanded, and they really are so helpful. And they're written in a way that you can understand exactly what you're talking about. There's no confusion, which I really love. But, for instance, I'm just going to give some examples. There's one here on divorcing your narcissist. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's actually not my book. That's written by Tracy Malone, who runs the
mm-hmm.
Narcissistic Abuse Support website. And
mm-hmm.
But I did do an article about it, and I did interviews with her. And she's got a lot of really good information in that book. So if someone is in the process of divorcing,
mm-hmm.
lots and lots of good information. So I would certainly suggest that they take a look at that.
Okay. How about other books that you would recommend for women going through this? Just your own books. Can you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, I have the Best of the Love Fraud blog series. And there's four of those books. One is Understanding the Sociopath, then Seduced by a Sociopath, then Dealing with a Sociopath, and then Recovery from the Sociopath. And what I did with those books is go through the blog articles because I've got, maybe 4,000 blog articles at this point. So,
mm-hmm.
it takes forever for anybody to, go through it all to find the stuff. So what I did was collected the articles that related to certain topics and put them into the books. And I've gotten good feedback from it. The good thing about those books is that they're all very short, you know, because you know they're only a few pages long, each of the stories. So we cover a lot of different topics, and so folks have told me that those are very helpful. Red Flags of Love Fraud is very helpful because it helps you, you know, understand, you know, what you've gotten into and how. That I also have a workbook that goes with that. So if you want to figure out what your vulnerability was and how you got into this situation, you could get both the Red Flags book and the workbook at the same time and just figure out, you know, exactly how you were affected and how you got into it and what messages, you know, you may have heard or you believed when you shouldn't have believed, you know, which got you into this situation. And the value there, of course, is if you know how you got into it, you can protect yourself from getting into it again. The other thing that I'd like to mention is that I also have a YouTube show now. I don't think I had that when I talked to you previously.
I just saw that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I do a live show every Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And, you know, I give a little presentation and then I answer people's questions. So if anybody, you know, wants to join me there, they can, plus, well, I've got, I don't know, 100 videos now that are up. But plus, you know, I do a new one every Tuesday. So folks can join me if they have any questions and just join the chat and ask a question. And I'll do my best to answer it then.
That's wonderful. I also see that you have one of your books here translated into Spanish.
Yes, that's the Red Flags of Love Fraud book, and
mm-hmm.
It's Estafas de Amorosa Roja, and it's probably the only book written in Spanish, you know, that addresses these topics, so I was very pleased to put that out, too.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because we have a number of Latino women who are part of our network who have other friends. They don't have, you know, proficient English. I mean, they do, but they may have family members or otherwise. So this would be a, you know, great thing for them. So
yes.
If you go to the lovefraud.com website, you're going to see everything, the continuing education courses for therapists. You know, sometimes you're dealing with therapists who are not that familiar with these particular situations. So, you know, there's resources for therapists that are on here. Also, you know, videos that Donna has there. Her blog that's on there. I mean, my goodness, you can just spend the rest of your life on your website. I wish I didn't have to go anywhere for the rest of my life. That's what I would be doing, Donna, spending it on your website, because there's just so much wonderful information here. So are there any final words that you'd like to give our women, words of advice in moving forward in their lives with their husbands, you know, being coming after them, all these vicious types of things going on, like how through this day to day, and how about the kids?
Right.
You know, do you address that at all? The children, when they're coming from these marriages where, you know, the husband's a sociopath or narcissist, how do you protect your children?
Well, yes, that can be an issue because you know, a lot of folks. A lot of these disordered people engage in parental alienation, in which they're trying to drive a wedge between you and the kids, and that's why we have a webinar coming up exactly on that topic on October 8th, presented by someone who's a true expert in that field, which is Joan Clauthus-Zenard. She has a website of her own, and she's been doing this work for 20 or 30 years or something like that. So she's a real expert on that topic. And this is the first of what I hope will be multiple webinars that Joan will present because she does have some information about, you know, how to protect the kids. But we do offer a webinar on how to empower children who must spend time with a disordered parent, because often that's the case. You know, they're still the father or they're still the mother, and they get the kid half the time. And what it amounts to is working hard to build the child's self-esteem and you know, to have the child learn, you know, that if daddy goes on a rant or something like that, you know, it's not their fault. And this is hard because it's very hard for kids to not feel like they're the problem. So that's the objective. The objective is to do what you can to help them develop their own identity and to realize that that they are loved, at least by you, that there may be some difficulties with the other parent, but then also that you're creating a safe space for them when they come back to your home. So, I mean, that's another whole topic. There's lots and lots to go over. But in answer of your first question about what to do, I think that the key is to focus at least part of the time on your own internal healing. And I talk about that in one of my webinars, in that there are two paths forward. You know, once you realize that you've been married to or involved with a sociopath, the one path is all the practical things you have to deal with. You know, if you need to get a job, if you need to find a place to live, what are you going to do with the kids, with the dog, you know, or anything like that. So all those practical issues that need to be dealt with, that's one of the paths. And the other path is your own internal healing. And this means recognizing that it's not your fault, that nothing you could have done would have made this person treat you any better. Recognizing that they took advantage of your vulnerability and processing the internal pain that's associated with all that. Now, a lot of people tend to think that they have to get all this practical stuff sorted out before they can start working on their own internal healing. And that's not necessarily true. You can start to work on your internal healing even if you're in the midst of this stuff. And actually, if you are able to do that, it will help you to deal with the practical matters. You know, if you can, you know, release some of that pain and release some of that sense of betrayal and grief and anger and everything else that you're feeling and work on getting that out of your system, it'll enable you to have more energy and to be able to think clearly and see clearly so you can figure out what to do as far as resolving the problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a lot of work. Thankfully, you have some wonderful resources that I hope our women are going to take advantage of. And we're certainly going to be discussing this in our support chat and on our Zoom meetings on how people can access all your information. And I just want to say that you are really a leader in this field. I really appreciate all the work you do. You put yourself out there, Donna. Come what may, come what might. And I'm sure not everybody loves you for doing that, correct?
Well,
like a lot of sociopaths, I meant.
Oh, yeah, I hear from sociopaths sometime. They tell me I don't know what I'm talking about and everything like that, and I just consider the source.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
But thank you, Bonnie. I appreciate your kind words, and I know you've been working to help people for a long time also, and you're still at it, and that's great. And, you know, so we're both of us are helping folks along.
Forging ahead. So thank you so much, Donna. I hope you'll come back to us again before another year is out just to do
okay.
An update, see how we're doing. And I want
okay.
to say thank you again and to all our ladies. I won't be here for the next week. Next weekend, it's my birthday weekend, so I'll be taking the weekend off. And so I'll be back here in 2 weekends. So love to all of you. If you need me, bonk@aol.com. Donna, thanks so much again, and good night to all of our listeners.